Hi everybody, this is Sam with an important announcement that viewers of our show need to hear. SCAN is a 501c3 organization which gives us the time and equipment to produce the show as you see it today. It is through SCAN that Ask an Atheist airs live in the Seattle area, and as many of you know, this is the source of many of our most interesting calls. This was recently posted to the scantv.org website. The mayor released his budget today, and the news for SCAN was not good. In the mayor's budget, SCAN's budget will be reduced significantly. Additionally, the mayor wants to put public access in Seattle out for bid, so there is no guarantee that SCAN would continue to be the public access manager for the city of Seattle. Under the reduced budget proposed by the mayor, the public access station would no longer offer studios, edit suites, or cameras. The station would no longer offer education and training. Instead, public access would just air submitted programming. Given that Ask an Atheist is produced entirely through the auspices of SCAN, using their studios, edit suites, and cameras, this is a threat to the future of the show. The SCAN TV website asks that people interested in the future of SCAN attend one of three budget hearings that will be occurring over the next month. If you are an Ask an Atheist viewer in the Seattle area, we would appreciate your help. Here's what the scantv.org site has to say about the budget meetings. There are three of them. The first is Wednesday, September 29th at 5:30 at the Northgate Community Center. The second is Wednesday, October 13th at 5:30 at South Seattle Community College. The last is Tuesday, October 26th at 5:30 in the City Council Chambers. Make signs that say keep SCAN on the air, be vocal, and keep public access alive. SCAN also asks that emails be sent to City Council members. Those email addresses, as well as other things that you can do to help, are posted again at the scantv.org site. While we do talk about the SCAN budget saga in today's episode, this information was released after we aired on Sunday, and we felt it was important enough to pass on to our online viewers sooner rather than later. We will be updating our website in the next few days with information about this issue, but please, visit scantv.org and see what you can do to help. Thanks for listening, and now for today's show. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, a weekly educational call-in program dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. We air live from SCAN Studios in Seattle every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and are archived online at www.askanatheist.tv. My name is Sam Ulvey, and with me today is Mike Gillis. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Today's been an interesting day.
This has been a day, but we're feeling pretty good about it now.
Interesting times in the Chinese sense of the word.
Yeah, just out there today. The format of the show is going to be a little different, partially because of some mix-up with scheduling on three or four different fronts, and because of a technical glitch here in the studio. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to take calls today, and we apologize for that in advance, in the future, on the web. You'll hear about it. We're sorry. We do have a lot of viewer interaction today. Unfortunately, it's not going to be live. So, interesting stuff. I drove up to SCAN Studios today, and it seemed to me that SCAN Studios had become a sort of a... It looked a little bit like an IKEA, I think.
Yeah, they did some painting. I know the studios have been closed all last week.
Yeah.
They're painting, and it happened to be bright blue and yellow.
Sorely needed.
Yeah.
In this neighborhood, it was kind of weird, and the paint was obviously fading. SCAN does the amazing thing they do here on a shoestring budget, and that means things like outside maintenance of the building kind of falls by the wayside. But they got some help, and they got some funding from other areas, I believe, to do this. And they painted it, so they gave it sort of the IKEA blue and yellow color, and it actually really stands out. And
I like it.
I like the aesthetic sensibility of it.
Yeah, I mean, aside from the giant dish in the tower, I mean, it always kind of looked like a house. I mean, it's very deceptive, the outside of SCAN. It looks like a house pushed up against a warehouse.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice. It'll stick out now, so.
But this kind of gives you an idea of what's going on with SCAN right now. As we've been saying recently, SCAN has been fighting sort of, not fighting really, but having a protracted discussion with the government of the city of Seattle.
To continue funding
for this network that brings you Ask an Atheist, one of two shows we know of that specifically deals with atheism. And they need your help.
And if you would like to help them out, if you would like to let them know, if you'd like to let them know that you appreciate SCAN, and you would like to help SCAN tell the government that you appreciate SCAN, you should be able to. You should go to their website, which I believe is scantv.org. And there's a lot of information there. The people that you contact on the SCAN via the SCAN website have always been very quick to get back to us and to our viewers. And so do talk to them. Do see what you can do to help.
Oh yeah, just because some of the other shows can SCAN can be a little kooky. Don't pretend that the people who work here are not consummate professionals. Just because they're UFO
Try to keep an even keel with the other producers here, but there are some weird shows.
Some
going
keels
on here.
Cannot be evened.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing with public access is it really does give people the opportunity to hear voices in the media that you wouldn't normally hear. Unfortunately, it's kind of like the internet in the way that once you open that up, just about anything can get in as long as somebody has the, I don't know, the persistence to sort of work to get their stuff on. So you hear these voices you wouldn't normally hear, but sometimes those voices hear voices. And but the thing is, again, this is the one venue where us as an atheist show can get a chance to talk to viewers.
A couple episodes ago, we did do an episode on the 9/11 Truther movement, specifically about one aspect of it. And we have been a little concerned if that episode ever, well, not concerned, actually kind of interested to see if when that episode hit some of the other producers here, is because I think we're the only show on SCAN who actually tries to debunk truthers rather than take their side.
Yeah, I've actually been to a producer association meeting where somebody's speech actually began with, well, you know, 9/11 was an inside job.
And then, you know, okay, there's...
That's where that speech goes.
And we're talking about
now.
Lunch. I mean, it's just, you know, we're having a discussion about budgetary stuff and kind of really standard things you talk about at a producer's meeting. And just out of nowhere, sort of like your rhetorical jack-in-the-box, 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah,
and it was interesting to see. I'll put it that way. However, not all shows on SCAN are conspiracy theory shows. I mean, there's us. There's
the High Bar is a really
high
good
bar.
Show. Great show. You should totally check that out.
If you guys watch us, I'd love to be on your show someday because I'm kind of into that. I'm an atheist.
A weird sort of interesting thing. Warren Etheridge, the host of the High Bar. I went to a film school where he was my instructor in screenwriting class. So this is another one of those weird small world things.
That is really...
It's like, hey, I know him. So yeah, it's a really good show. Warren is an awesome guy. You want to check it out. It's a lot of fun conversation about local and national issues. What else? Bandish was a really good one.
Bandish does traditional Indian music, which is really cool. They jam for a while, and it's really interesting. I like watching that show. They've got we've got Nightmare Fuel.
Nightmare Fuel, which is... It's like condensed crazy of the internet. Nick McCoy, who works here at the station, does it. It is hilarious and disturbingly hypnotic. So there are a lot of good shows on SCAN.
And the reason we're mentioning some of these other shows is that there's also another thing SCAN is doing right now called the SCAN Awards. Is that every year they take votes from on the air and people who come to the studio and figure out who wins awards for whatever.
There's an actual statue with it too. You actually get this little glass statue. So. Please, please, please vote for us if you go to scantv.org or go to our website, www.askanatheist.tv. There's a link on there. Vote for us. We're up in four different categories. There's best new show, best studio live show, best locally produced show,
and
our personal favorite. We would so want to win this. I mean, vote for us on everything, but if you are going to vote for us on just one thing, please vote for us for favorite religious and spiritual program.
Absolutely. Oh, man, that would just completely make my day.
Oh, they are going to air the actual SCAN Awards show, so if you win that, you will see some sort of a speech, and I may have to thank Jesus from the podium. So.
And sort of the final announcement for today is, as usual, you can contact us, as you can see right now, at the askanatheist.tv website. But another way you can contact us, we have recently added to the webpage and we've announced on the TV show already, but we're announcing again, is that even if you would like to call us and you would like your voice to be on the show, but unfortunately you can't contact us while the show is live, we have a voicemail line at 206-420-0997. And as you will see today, when you call us with a voicemail, We'll actually put your call on the air and respond to your voicemail as if it were a call. So please feel free to call that and leave us a message, and we'll be happy to talk to you.
I think it opens things up a bit too, because I mean, normally calls, of course, are restricted to people who are free and available,
right,
and able to call us during 3 to 4 Pacific time every Sunday. Mm. This opens it up a bit. So if you're somewhere in a different time zone, a different country, and you want to give us a call, you want to challenge us, ask us a question, or you're just curious, please, please give the number a call, and we will play it on the air.
And we're going to be experimenting with other ways to contact us as the time goes on, but voicemail was definitely something we wanted to do. So again, 206-420-0997. And now I think we'll get to the first segment today. If you've been following the website, one of the things we announced a few weeks ago was that atheist blogger and author Greta Christina was going to be in the studio to do a taped interview. And that happened about 2 weeks ago, actually after the 9/11 episode, to give you an idea of the mood in the room when we did it. So she was in. We did a bit of an interview after the show was over, and then we decided that we were going to air that interview at a later date. And today is that day. And it was actually pretty interesting because, as you'll see in the interview, we actually got a phone call for somebody who had gotten the times mixed up. So in the middle of this taped interview, sort of like that Mr. Show clip, we got a phone call. And it actually turned out to be a pretty interesting phone call, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So how did you, Mike here did the interview. How did you...
I enjoyed it. Greta Christina is someone that I've read a lot of her stuff. There's several times during the interview that I'm about to say something or actually add to something she says. Like, I'm like, oh, I know how to bounce off of this. And then she says it, and I'm like, well, I don't need to talk. And I think that's one of the things I have is that so much of what she writes, and I say this in the interview, I wish I had written it. I wish so much of what she says and writes, I'm like, wow, I wish I had written that article. And
she was new to me. I don't really wade the blogosphere as much as most, and somebody said her name, and I looked up what she had written and what she had done, and it turned out I was converted right there.
She's really good. There's an article called Atheists in Anger, mm-hmm. Atheists in the LGBT Movement. There's a lot of really good stuff that she's written online, and I would highly recommend just Google it.
Then she went to the RAM with us.
She went to the RAM. Yeah,
it was really cool.
So you look up Greta Christina's blog. It's a great one. It's one of the two or three blogs that I actually really enjoy. Mm-hmm. She's just a great writer, and
without further ado, if we're ready, here is the Greta Christina interview.
All right, push
Welcome
the button,
to
Frank.
A non-live version of Ask an Atheist. I'm Mike Gillis, and I'm sitting here with Greta Christina. Greta Christina is one of the most widely read and well-respected bloggers in the atheist blogosphere. She was recently ranked by an independent analyst as one of the top 10 most popular atheist bloggers and does regular speaking engagements for the Speakers Bureau of the Secular Student Alliance. She's a regular atheist correspondent for Alternet, the online political magazine, and has been writing about atheism and skepticism for her own cleverly named Greta Christina's blog since 2005. Her writing has appeared in numerous magazines, newspapers, and anthologies, including Ms., Skeptical Inquirer, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the anthology Everything You Know About God Is Wrong. She's been writing professionally since 1989, and topics including sexuality and sex positivity, LGBT issues, politics, culture, and whatever crosses her mind. She's also the person who's written more stuff that I wish I had written myself. With that, just welcome Greta Christina to Ask an Atheist.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted to be here.
So a topic you've written on extensively is that what we as the atheist movement can learn from the LGBT movement. What do you see as the parallels between the two?
Well, I think there's a lot of parallels between the two movements. The atheist movement is a movement, or a community, I should say. The atheist community is a community that people tend to come out into as adults. Unlike, say, the African American community, or having an identity as a Jew or as a woman, where those are identities that people grow up with, they have communities that they've grown up with their entire lives. Like being an LGBT person, being an atheist is an identity that people come into as adults, and that's a different kind of community. It on the one hand, it leaves people feeling a little bit unmoored when they come into that movement and that community, and often, in fact, coming into that community means having to alienate ourselves from our family and from the people that we knew. At the same time, there's also this, you know, sense of liberation when people start to identify as an atheist, just as when people start to identify as somebody who's LGBT, there is this sense of, you know, liberation and, you know, being able to reinvent yourself. So, and of course, both the LGBT movement and the atheist movement are very strongly opposed by religion. And a lot of the hostility against us and the arguments against us are made by organized religion. So, and one of the things that I often say is that the atheist movement is right now in 2010 is about where the LGBT movement was in the early 70s, in the early days of right after the Stonewall riots, when the movement was becoming very visible and very vocal and very active and much less apologetic and much more in your face. That was happening in the LGBT movement in around the early 70s. And there had been a movement and people organizing before that, just like there have been atheists organizing for decades before the so-called new atheist movement. But clearly in the last few years, we've kind of moved into overdrive. And
I'm just saying, what would you say the atheist equivalent of Stonewall was?
I think that the atheist equivalent of Stonewall was 9/11. I think that that's the event that got a lot of people saying, I have to do something about this. I can't stand by and watch. I can't just say, well, I don't believe in God, I don't have religion, but that's okay, I'm going to live and let live. Religion doesn't do that much harm, and I don't feel like rocking the boat. I think that 9/11 got a lot of people saying, okay, enough of this. Religion does a huge amount of harm in the world. It just killed thousands of people in one horrible morning, and I can't stand by and watch. Also, 9/11 was what inspired Sam Harris to write his book, The End of Faith, and that was the first of the big atheist bestsellers. And I think that kind of got the ball rolling on a lot of that.
Absolutely. I've noticed that one real strength of the LGBT movement has been its effectiveness at building a sense of empathy with people outside of the community. Like, for instance, if there were a U.S. senator who were to make a bigoted remark about gays or lesbians, you'd have basically the liberal blogosphere crack in half, and basically calling for the guy's head, calling him out, and he would have forced, even a really conservative one, be forced to make some kind of apology. This hasn't been the case for atheists yet. When a prominent media figure attacks us, it seems like only atheists seem to speak out against it. I imagine that's been the case with LGBT activists for decades.
It has been, yes.
How did they change that, and how can atheists change that?
Well, one of the main things that we need is just time. When the LGBT movement was getting off the ground, nobody else was speaking for us, or hardly anybody else was speaking for us. We pretty much had to stand up and speak for ourselves. There was a certain amount of alliance building that was done. Harvey Milk, for instance, was very good at that when he was a supervisor in San Francisco. He was good at building alliances with the labor movement and with the seniors movement. But for the most part, we were speaking for ourselves, and a lot of that is just time. And a lot of it also is coming out, and this is another, I think, huge parallel between the atheist movement and the LGBT movement, is that coming out is the single most important political act that we can take. It's by far the thing that we can do best to change people's ideas about us. That's certainly true for LGBT people. Polls consistently show that the number one factor in determining whether somebody has positive or negative attitudes about gay people is whether they know one, or whether they know that they know one, I should say, because lots of people, they know gay people, they just don't necessarily know that they do. So when gay people come out of the closet and disclose to whoever they can comfortably, to their friends, to their family, to their coworkers, that simple act goes a huge way to demolishing a lot of the myths about us. And it also goes a long way to getting other people wanting to defend us. It's when, if you think you don't know any gay people, you think they're those others, they're outside. I don't know anybody like that, and you're more likely to believe a lot of the myths, and some of the bigotry about us. But when people know that they know somebody who's gay,
they have to apply the stereotypes to reality.
Exactly. They have to apply the stereotypes to reality or question the stereotypes. They say, well, but that's not true of Jane. That's not true of Fred. That's not true of these people I know. And that makes them more likely to want to stand up for us as allies. So I think that that's a huge amount of it. When atheists, the more atheists can come out, there's also sort of the snowball effect. It's like the more of us come out, the more other people feel comfortable coming out because there's safety in numbers. And because it's, again, another parallel with the LGBT community is there's a certain amount of self-hatred. People don't want to come out as LGBT because they have themselves bought into the stereotypes. They themselves have bought into the idea that, you know, that they're immoral, that they don't have any sexual morals, that they're unhappy, that they're crazy, that their lives are tortured, whatever. And so they don't want to identify. And so the more they see, so it's that gay people can be happy, that the gay people can be moral, that we can be functioning positive members of society who have something to contribute, that makes them feel more comfortable coming out and internally identifying as gay and also coming out. And I think that's true for atheists as well. A lot of people don't want to identify as atheist, not because of their own beliefs. If you ask them, what do they believe? It's well, no, I don't believe in God, or I think that the God hypothesis is unlikely or implausible. But because they've bought into the stereotypes about atheists, they're uncomfortable identifying as one. And the more of us who can come out, it doesn't just make people who aren't atheists more willing to stand up for us. It also makes other non-believers feel comfortable joining the movement. So just to continue that, one more thing.
Sure.
So coming out is a huge part of it. That's one of the main things that we can do to get other people to stand up for us. I also think that we need to do more positive, proactive work doing alliance building. Work with, civil liberties organizations, even with, progressive religious groups who share our opinions about, say, separation of church and state, even if they don't share our opinions about God. And doing more to do alliances with the feminist movement, with the African American movement, with the environmentalist movement, on issues that we have in common. The more we can do that, and the more those groups, it's alliance building isn't just about getting other people to help us. We need to be willing to, if we put energy into helping them, then they'll, and to stand up for their issues and their rights, then they're going to be more willing to speak up for us.
How do you feel the atheist community has done at doing that?
I think that we haven't done a great job yet at doing a lot of alliance building. We've done a certain amount. I mean, certainly I've talked with student groups who do things like service projects. There was a group at, I believe it was Purdue University, that worked with one of the campus Christian groups to go down during spring break to New Orleans and help rebuild after Katrina. And so there are some people who are doing it. For the most part, I think, and this is appropriate because we're still a relatively young movement, we've mostly been working on building ourselves. We're trying to herd the cats. We're trying to get people to come out. We're trying to create safe spaces for people to come out into to some extent. We're trying to make ourselves visible. We're trying to work on our own issues. And I think that's appropriate. But we've been doing that for a few years now, and I think that it's time for us to start seeing ourselves as part of the social change movement more broadly and do more of that. I'd like to see us doing more.
Yeah, definitely. Because one thing I have noticed is it's immediately there's this reaction to simply saying that you disagree with somebody on a question of faith, and it doesn't seem like other people notice that when they state something that's the opposite of somebody, like saying, I believe that the only way to God is through Jesus, they are in effect saying to other people, even in other religions, that they are wrong. Why do you think that the atheist stigma is so there? I mean, I've read several of your articles on Alternet and the comments. I mean, these are liberals. This isn't just people coming in from the Discovery Institute to scream at you. A lot of the same canards are still there. I mean, how do we fight that, those sort of misconceptions?
Well, some of it is just time. How we fight misconceptions against this is just repetition. We have to just keep saying and saying and saying, no, that's not true. One of the things that I write about a lot is patience, is how the atheist movement needs to be patient. And by that, I don't mean accommodationist and sitting back and waiting. But I think it's easy to forget that we've made these same arguments over and over again. We've made them dozens of times. We've made them hundreds of times. But the person that we're talking with, they haven't heard it before. You know, it's like, you know, the hundredth time that I have to argue against Pascal's wager, you know, it makes me want to tear my hair out and scream. It makes me want to smack people. But I have to remember, they haven't heard it. They haven't thought about this. They think this is a new idea. And so to some extent, it's just a matter of time. We have to keep talking. We have to keep, you know, just keep making our case. I do think that, though, there's something that we need to accept, that the atheist movement needs to acknowledge, and that is there is a difference between the atheist movement and the LGBT movement, and that's that the LGBT movement isn't telling straight people that they're mistaken to be straight. And we are saying that. You know, there's no way of getting around that. I mean, we can be polite about it. We can say, look, we can work with you. We can coexist. But there's no way of getting around the fact that atheists are saying, we think religious believers are mistaken. When you say, I don't believe in God, you're saying people who do believe in God, they're wrong. And I think that we have to just acknowledge that there's some degree that we're always going to rub people the wrong way. Because we are saying to people, you're mistaken. Now, we can say we think you're mistaken, but we can still work together on issues that we have in common. We can say we can agree to disagree. We can set that particular disagreement aside for the moment and move on to other issues. We can talk about the Yankees game, whatever. But I do think we have to acknowledge that atheism is different from other social change movements in a lot of ways because of that. And because religion relies on sort of social agreement to continue, religion relies on people not questioning it. It relies on this sort of social consensus that we won't ask the hard questions, that we won't say, but what evidence do you have for that? That we will just sort of accept people's personal experience and intuition and the authority of the holy texts and what our parents taught us. Religion relies on that. It's like the emperor's new clothes. And the very fact that atheists are saying the emperor has no clothes, even if we say it in the most mild-mannered way possible, even if all we're saying is, I don't believe in God, there again, there's no way to say that without undercutting the foundation that religion is built on. And I think to some extent we have to just accept that. It's never going to be easy.
It's funny because, I mean, I even see this among a lot of people who call themselves tolerant. One of my, I guess the first time I really felt the sting of this was actually in a gender studies class. Mm-hmm. Probably the most tolerant, liberal group of people all condensed into one area. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about discrimination and how what prism you shoot it through. And I'm a heterosexual white male. Mm-hmm. What do I shoot my empathy through? What is it that I see in other people that I can see in myself? And my atheism was it. Mm-hmm. When I announced that to the class, I might as well have been asking for donations to Al-Qaeda. I mean, there's a chill that went through the room, mm-hmm. and everyone was staring at their shoes, and there was this sense of, will this guy please just shut up? Mm-hmm. Where, to me, that feeling there, it's very easy for me to project that on how somebody else could feel it being excluded. Mm-hmm. And this, again, was a very, very progressive group, and it's the same thing with a lot of the comments that you've gotten on alternate articles.
Absolutely.
And even recently, it's another casual sort of thing. I don't know if you saw the speech that the president made recently, trying to be inclusive, and yes. This is the real irony, and in trying to be inclusive, he excluded us.
Yes, yes, absolutely. He's trying to be, well, this is sort of one of the largest bees in my bonnet, and I have a lot of bees in my bonnet. I have a very large hive of bees in my bonnet. But one of them has to do with this progressive ecumenicalism. And I have found that people who are progressive ecumenicalists, people who are, you know, I'm a Christian, you're a Jew, you're a Wiccan, you're a Hindu, you know, but we can all get along and we're all worshiping the same God in different ways. And, you know, isn't that interesting that you think God is an elephant with 100 arms? And isn't it interesting that I think God is a, you know,
burning bush?
Is a burning bush or a, you know, this carpenter who got crucified 2,000 years ago. There's a couple of things. One is that I think, and I've gotten some of the ugliest anti-atheist remarks made to me by people from that world. And I've had people call me a fascist. I've had people compare me to Glenn Beck. I've had people call me really ugly personal names, who are people who, as you say, they're generally extremely politically progressive, and they're extremely tolerant. They're very good at this, you know, hand-holding, let's all get along kumbaya thing. And yet when it comes to atheists, they're very hostile. And I do find that a little bit baffling, but I think that it comes from a couple of different places. Some of it is, again, that we're new. You know, they're not used to us, and that's just something that's going to get better with time. But I also think that again, we have to accept this, that the religious, you know, the people in this progressive liberal ecumenical world, they're all saying, well, we're all worshiping the same God in the same way, or in different ways. We're all worshiping the same God, but it's different ways, and we just have different ways of coming at it. And atheists are coming at it and saying, no, you're not. First of all, you have major differences between you. And second of all, there is no God. And we think you're all mistaken. You know, you can't all be right, but you can all be wrong. And the thing is that within this ecumenical world, there is this understanding that you don't ask hard questions. There's this understanding that's considered extremely rude that's a mild way of putting it. It's considered rude at best and intolerant and bigoted at worst to point out flaws in other people's religion, to point out, gee, you know, this isn't consistent. Your holy text says this over here, but it says this other thing over here. And there's really no evidence, you know, you believe that the Jewish carpenter was God, but there's not a whole lot of good evidence that he even existed. And, you know, these books all contradict each other, and they were written decades later. And, you know, those kinds of, they don't ask hard questions of one another about their faith. That's considered to be breaking the rules of ecumenicalism. The whole idea is you're supposed to be respectful of each other's faith, and respect of each other's faith means not asking those questions. And what they see is there as being two options. There's the polite kumbaya hand-holding, we're never going to ask each other hard questions, or there's gross religious intolerance where you're, you know, banning people and, you know, burning churches or burning synagogues and, you know, Stalin and, you know, the Crusades and the Spanish Inquisition. Those are their two options that they see. And the atheist movement is coming along and saying there's a third option. We can respect you as people. We can respect your right to exist. We can respect your right to believe whatever you want to. We can respect your right to practice whatever religion you want to. And yet, we can ask hard questions about it. We can treat your religion as a hypothesis about the world. We can treat your religion as one idea among many about how the world works and why it is the way it is, and ask, is this a hypothesis that stands up? And that's a really different model. And I think that that's something that progressive ecumenical people are not used to. And again, I think it's just going to take time.
Okay. Looks like we have a call. Aaron? Aaron, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
What have you got for us today?
Well, like I was telling your call screener, I was looking for a podcast, for y'all's podcast today to listen to at work. And I looked up Ask an Atheist on my phone, and y'all didn't have a new one, but under it was the Atheist Handbook, and I thought that was going to be something interesting for me to listen to, like some more insight about atheism and atheism in general. And I downloaded all the episodes, and what it is actually is a quote handbook on how to debate atheists as a Christian. And I listened to the first little, I don't know what you want to call it. They call it a chapter. And just some of this guy's rhetoric was so ridiculous. The whole, he said, God didn't create evil, people created evil, and he can't stop evil because that would mean killing people. So instead of maybe taking one person's life to save a couple million, he just lets the million die because otherwise it'd be wrong to take one life. And I was listening to this, and it made no sense to me at all.
No, it doesn't at all.
I skipped ahead to the science one, and the first thing that he says is he equated scientists with psychics.
And you gotta be kidding
me. No. He said psychics document themselves as proving that they've divine the future. And he said, well, that's what scientists do, because it's their job. So they have to say that they got this right, because otherwise they'd be out of a job.
Well, what's it with them in prophecy, though? I mean, isn't that essentially what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I was just aghast at what this man was saying. And then he said, what did he say? He said, he also said people that make theories are just making everything they say about a theory is just made up. They're just making it up on the fly.
I always just find it hilarious when people basically, thank you for your call. I find it hilarious that people basically project what they're doing.
Exactly.
On other people, mm-hmm. and it's clear that some of these people have never actually talked to an intelligent atheist before. Otherwise, they'd realize, I mean, oh, he can't kill one person, but what about all the people that he killed in Sodom and Gomorrah? Mm-hmm. What about all the people he commanded to be killed, let nothing breathe, live? That isn't consistent.
Yeah. What I think is interesting is the way that a lot of times people will attack atheism by saying it's just like religion. You know, they'll say, oh, it's just a matter of faith, and, you know, you can't be any more certain that God doesn't exist than that God does exist, so therefore it's just a matter of faith, so therefore it's just like religion. Well, obviously we can deflate that by saying you don't need 100% certainty. We're coming to a provisional conclusion based on the available evidence. If we see better evidence, we'll change our mind, etc. But what I think is really interesting is you're attacking atheism by saying that it's like religion, so therefore what's so great about religion?
Yes. Exactly. It's weird because I think a lot of it is that a lot of people like this have an inability to see a different template. They have this very clear template where this is my God, this is my Messiah or prophet, or this is my book. And they simply want to swap out the names for atheists. They just simply can't understand that somebody doesn't use that template. It's like, okay, your book is on the origin of species, your God is science, and Darwin is your prophet. I mean, it's so weird because it's so clear that I think they're just so unable to see somebody else who just has, like you said, that third option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That same thing with fundamentalists is, and we want to do an episode of this at some point, but what are the fundamentals aside from a lack of belief in one thing?
Well, yeah, it's like whenever people say that, you know, atheists and, you know, there's all these atheist fundamentalists running around, and I always want to say, so what is the book that we are supposedly literally interpreting? What they mean is they want to use fundamentalist to mean, I guess, extremist, or to mean, I don't know, they're not very clear about it. They seem to want to use the word fundamentalist to mean extremist, or to mean just somebody who's very passionate about what they think. But it's like, you know, you look, you know, fundamentalist, it means fundamentals. It means you would, you know, literally strictly adhere to some text. And it's like, well, what's the text?
I don't know. Yeah. I've never seen it. And it's weird because they'll always try to say something like, you know, it's on the order of species or Mein Kampf, which is weird because they clearly aren't interested in being intellectually honest, where, I mean, the Hitler one is just especially bad because not only did he profess his Catholicism all the time, but the SS had God mit us on their belt. And, I mean, he was clearly a creationist in the book. He denounced these sorts of things. It's just, it's weird because how do you argue with somebody who's dead set on not caring if the claims they make correspond with reality?
Well, that's a question I have a lot. And it's not just hardliners either. It's not just the right-wing fundamentalists who do that. I get into a lot of debates with very progressive religious believers, with, you know, progressive Christians, with New Age believers, people who practice Wicca, and, you know, these sort of New Age beliefs. And they'll come out right out of the gate and say, you're relying too much on reason, you're relying too much on evidence, and it's not fair to subject religion to questions of reason and evidence. And, you know, it's this other realm, it's the non-overlapping magisteria, it's this whole other realm of knowing, it's this whole other way of knowing. And it's a good question, is how do you debate with people, how do you engage with people who don't care about evidence, who don't care about reason? And I've been running into people who will actually say, I don't care whether what I believe is true.
Yeah.
And what do you say to that? You know, what on earth do you say to somebody who says, I don't care what I believe is true? But I think that one of the things we need to remember when we're engaging in these conversations, especially when we're doing it in a public forum, if we're doing it on a blog, if we're doing it in a comment thread, if we're doing it in an online forum of some sort, is that the people who we're trying to convince are not necessarily the people that we're talking to.
Absolutely.
We're not. It's the people, other people who are listening in. It's the other people who are on the sidelines, who are kind of on the fringes. There's no magic formula for how do you convince somebody who doesn't care about evidence and reality.
Yeah, I've had that same thing, and that's why I've stopped having private arguments with people like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. That if you're going to debate them at all, you have to have some kind of an audience, because I'm not going to convince, say, Ray Comfort that he's wrong about anything. I mean, he's got a vested financial interest in this. There's no way. Like you said, he's in that same place. But even if I did convince him, and I did shoot down his argument, he would lose everything he had.
Yes.
So, I mean, he would be giving up everything. Mm-hmm. But I can debate somebody like that in front of an audience. And if then there might be somebody who's up in the air, somebody who mm-hmm. thinks they're the only person that feels what this person mm-hmm. is saying is ridiculous. They think they're alone.
Yeah. I mean, and certainly, you know, there are a handful of people who, you know, look at somebody like Dan Barker, who was very committed. He was a preacher, and he was a very fundamentalist preacher, and he came out into atheism. So clearly, it is possible in some cases to persuade people. I think something else, but it's not common. I think something else we need to remember when we're engaging in debates and discussions with people is that persuading people doesn't always happen right away. Certainly, you know, I had religious beliefs for many years that I eventually let go of, and it's not like I read this one argument. It's not like I read one article in the Skeptical Inquirer that's like, oh, well, obviously this doesn't make any sense. It can take time. It's sort of like water on rock, and you know, so you may not be convincing somebody in that particular argument, but you may sort of be putting the little chink of doubt in there. And that's where I think what we really need to do, what atheists need to do, is we need to not just be making arguments, but we need to be building a stronger community. We need to be building a safe place for people to come out into when they do leave religion. Because one of the things I run into in a lot of my discussions with believers is you can back them logically into a corner where any rational person would be, they'd say, okay, fine, I give up, you're right. But because they're very committed to their religious beliefs, they're emotionally committed to it, they may be financially committed to it, they have friends and family who are in it, or they don't want to believe that they're going to die. And that's a hard one. They want to believe that they're going to live forever with their friends in the sky. And we need to do a better job, I think, of not just encouraging people to come out, but of providing a safe place for people to come out into, providing a community and providing a positive humanist philosophy, doing more at disseminating it's like we don't believe we're going to live forever, but we think that that's okay. This is why we think death is okay. This is how we create meaning for ourselves, even though God hasn't given it to us. So I think that one of the things we really need to do is not just try to get at those chinks in the logical armor of their beliefs, but make it clear that atheism is okay.
Well, rather than driving them to the edge of a cliff, you have to make sure there's a net down there.
Exactly.
Otherwise, they're going to keep pushing against it.
They're just going to keep pushing against it forever if you don't provide them with something, with a safety net.
So how are we doing at that at this point, and what would the ideal safe haven look like?
Well, I don't think that there's one ideal safe haven. I think that, you know, people are diverse and atheists are diverse, and everybody's going to need something somewhat different. I think we are already doing a fairly good job of getting positive humanist ideals and philosophies out into the world. And it's a little bit difficult because that's not what the news media wants to cover. They want to cover the conflicts and the arguments. And, you know, it's you know, nice humanist doesn't make great headline. But I think that we're doing a certain amount of this. I'd like to see us doing more. I'd also love to see us doing a better job at providing a replacement for the social structures that religion provides for people. That's a lot of what people look to religion for. It's not necessarily, you know, it's like, you know, you ask somebody, why did you join this church? And it's not because, oh, well, I found their arguments, you know, their theology based on the ontological argument to be very persuasive. It's because it's because they like the people, there's support, you know, the people are friendly, the people are welcoming, you know, there's childcare, there's, you know, good coffee, whatever. And I would like to see us do a better job at providing a really good in-the-flesh, not just online, but in-the-flesh support networks and, you know, regular meeting places and, you know, that type of thing. So that when people do leave religion, they don't feel quite so unmoored.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming and sitting with us today, and I want to wish you well on the rest of your tour, and I'll continue to forward all of your articles on Facebook.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me. This was really fun, and thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate it.
It's too late. All right. Though.
It is.
Thanks a lot for coming.
Thank you so much. I had a ball. This was really excellent.
And now, for something completely different. We have some news for you.
Yeah, this one comes out of Alabama. I like to think of it as a cradle of progressive and Enlightenment thought.
There are some there. I've spent time in Alabama.
Oh, yeah. It can be lonely to be a free thinker in Alabama. Actually, that kind of reminds me of something Hitchens did when he was doing his book tour for God Is Not Great, is that he specifically asked to be sent through the Bible Belt. That he wanted to hit basically the parts of the state where you didn't expect to see any atheists, and he was packed every single time, and half of the people who came to those events all thought that they were the only atheist in town.
Yeah. I lived in Phoenix for a number of years, and for a while I thought I was the only humanist I knew. And then I moved up here, and the AHA conference was in Phoenix, and I saw some of the people running. I was like, I know that guy.
Yeah.
How come we never talked about this?
It's the weirdest thing, and I mentioned this in sort of the interview, I think, is that a lot of times when you're the only person to say, you know, I'm an atheist, like, that event happens where you sort of assert what you are and what you believe.
Yeah.
People come up to you afwards and say,
thank you.
Hey, thank you for saying that. I am too.
That's actually happened to me a couple times already.
Yeah, so. That I'm the only one. And I think that was one of the connections that Greta always makes usually to the LGBT movement.
Yeah.
Is that there's that one person who is brave enough to be out, and that's the person that everyone else comes out to privately. So I think that's an important part of having the show.
That's how my dad got comfortable with the whole atheism thing. You friended him. I share a name with my dad.
On Facebook.
And my dad and Mike were friends for a year before they realized that it was the wrong Sam Mulvey. This is on Facebook. And my dad, for a while, was kind of, ooh, atheism, you've abandoned the family agnosticism. It's like, hey, it's all right. But it took a year of listening to you talk and the conversations that we would all have for him to finally call me up and say, yeah, you guys are okay.
Yeah.
We might want to do the news story, actually.
Yeah, let's do the news story. Yeah, this comes out of Alabama. This is the Birmingham Examiner, basically. This Examiner is a site where people can post or blog. Proselytizing results in library ban for Alabama teen. Caleb Hansen is a 16-year-old young man, and he's been banned from all branches of the Chattahoochee Valley Regional Library System for 6 months, not for failing to return books, but for disrupting library business bordering on criminal trespassing. Hansen, who's from Phoenix City, Alabama, a town that shares a Georgia border with Columbus, attends the First Assembly of Church God in Phoenix City. According to a letter from Kirsten Edwards, who's acting as manager of the North Columbus Public Library, Mr. Hansen was accosting library patrons and asking them, as they were attempting to enter the facility, he was asking them about their religious faith and offering biblical advice.
Right.
Basically, this is a homeschool kid who, I don't know, there's a weird thing that happens with Christianity in the United States. I think they believe, much as the Blues Brothers did, that they are on a mission from God.
And chosen by God is a phrase they use a lot.
That
hang out in the library.
The usual rules of etiquette, of walking up to a stranger and harassing them with something, just don't apply because what I'm harassing them about supersedes all the usual conversational rules.
There's a bunch of lines here that I'm always a little afraid to cross, much like when we had that thing with the signs down in Olympia, is that a library is property owned and operated by the government. So theoretically, I mean, you know, you'd think that that's kind of a free speech zone.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's a service to the community, these libraries. They're there for citizens to go there and read and participate and learn so that they can be better citizens. And he's allowed to say stuff at the library. What he's not allowed to do is impede the access of library patrons to the resources of the library.
Yeah, make it impossible for them to use library resources. I mean, if I was, and I'm somebody who works in retail, and we've had this sort of experience before where we had a customer who came in.
I love retail
stories. He was an Amway guy. I don't know if you know Amway. Amway is about as close to a secular religion as you can. If you doubt this, meet somebody who sells Amway and criticize it.
Some would say not secular. I've seen Amway listed on those cult websites, like watch out for these cults.
Oh, man.
And it'd be like the family and then Amway. And like,
Amway.
Wait, what?
And I actually worked at a movie theater in high school, and I had a boss who tried to sell Amway on everybody. And I was familiar with the sales pitch that he would toss out because I'd heard everyone else tell this story about the Amway. And this was actually an interesting story because this guy, who was very much like Michael Scott on The Office, even had a screenplay that the district manager had to release off the theater's computer.
Right.
It had ninjas in it.
Oh, nice.
He actually, this is a weird boss. He claimed to have ninja training. He was a weird, weird dude. Seriously, watch The Office if you want to get an idea of what it was like working for this dude. Anyways, he was big on Amway. And like Amway, it's a pyramid scheme where basically you have, like a vampire, you try to accrue minions under you. And those people try to accrue minions of their own. And generally speaking, when the person in the top 15% ends up and making any money on this.
Minions!
Minions! Fly! the fun thing with it is that you're so desperate to accrue minions. I don't really know of anyone who pitches Amway that actually talks about the products they sell. They talk about selling Amway.
Yeah, it was a number of years before I figured out that Amway actually had products.
Yeah, I didn't know what they did. I thought they just recruited people. It was like joining Heaven's Gate.
I thought it was kind of like the Elks.
Yeah.
It was a club, and what did they do? I don't know. We get together. All right.
So anyways, my boss comes up to me, and this is when we always get to see free movies on Thursday night as they were spooling it up. And as we went through the process, this manager approached me and said, "Mike, you're a pretty smart guy, right?" And I was like, "Oh, crap," inside my head. And I'm just like, okay. Here we go. I'm going to have to say no to him. It was like an after-school special, but instead of like, you know, the 12-year-old kid with a joint, it's my boss.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually told him the biggest lie. At that time, I was thinking about going to an art school. And have you ever told a lie where you know as it comes out of your mouth, it is just a pile of crap, and you're dreading it, but you just have to keep talking. You got to get it out because, and I'm like, well, you know, I don't want to make money. I want to go into art school, and I feel that if I make money, it'll hurt my integrity as an artist. And I'm just like, oh, inside, I'm like, there's no way he's buying this. And he goes, I can respect that. And I'm like, oh, and run
wow,
away.
It worked?
It worked.
Oh, man.
It's like, the only worst lie I could think of to tell him is, well, I'm actually a robot and not eligible to work for Amway. But anyways.
I'm from Mars.
That's that same sort of thing, the idea that you just sort of accost somebody in public. And we kick this dude out.
Yeah.
Not before he, you know, challenged my manager to a fight.
Really?
That's kind of a hard sell for Amway normally. But anyways, this kid goes into libraries. He's harassing patrons. And it's just amazing. And it goes back into this thing where people try to say that atheists, like us, were somehow disrespectful or pushy or angry or militant. We don't do things like this. We have a TV show that people can call into. We put our views out there, but people have to approach us. We don't go to a public place and ambush them like Ray Comfort and people
right.
do.
Some people, we've gotten this a little bit, that some people seem to think that our mere existence of our television show on Sunday constitutes some sort of invasion. But we're on a TV screen. We can't touch you. We can't get in your way. We can't prevent you from going to church. You have to come to us.
And there's this weird little rectangle thing with batteries in it that has buttons on it. And if you don't like the things that we say, you can always turn away. I mean,
assuming you don't keep losing it like I do.
Seriously, if not, there's little buttons on the front of the screen. And if nothing else, you can shoot it like Elvis.
Yeah.
It's just so silly. You can make
if you
it
got
go
the budget.
There's a difference. We don't, it's weird.
Okay, if you're going to shoot the TV to get rid of Ask an Atheist, could you film it and send it to us? That would be amazing. I would completely use that on the show. Yeah.
But it's amazing. Again, it's not really censorship because one, he's preventing other people from using the material at the library. And if I would just go into a library and just start screaming anything, they would kick me out.
It's not he's not banned for his speech. He was removed from the library because he was preventing library patrons from accessing materials provided by
the library. And creating an environment where people don't want to use the library.
Right.
I mean, that's a big part of it as well. So it's just kind of amazing. It's not that it's the substance of his speech, but how he's doing it and where he's doing it and what the context is. And I think this is the interesting thing with a lot of conspiracy-minded people, is they have a tendency to turn everything into, you're trying to silence my message, where it's like, no, I mean, it has nothing to do with your message, just don't do that.
And you can go 50 feet outside the building and continue with your message and nobody's going to stop you.
No one's going to stop you. It's just amazing that people think that they have carte
assuming blanche. You continue with your message and not continue with your message and a baseball bat.
It's like somebody can come up to me and harass me at the door of the library with something I agree with, like, hey, isn't Citizen Kane a great film? And if they keep following me around and trying to get an agreement out of me, I'm like, whoa, I don't care.
That happens
off.
To me a lot with political things I actually agree with, is I'm on my way to something and they're like, well, we got this I-9 million and 7. that's about widgets. And I'm like, well, I agree with widgets, but I really have to go this. I'm running out of time. And then they get in your face and stuff like that. And that stops being speech and stops being the, you know, some people feel differently. But I feel like if you're getting in my way, that stops being speech and turns into something
else. Well, as soon as somebody says no, it's done.
It should be.
But at the same time, not everyone is comfortable saying no. And we live in one of the most passive-aggressive regions in the country. So
yes.
A lot of times the real answer is they just don't go to the library anymore. And if people don't go to the library, they're probably not going to get as much funding as they do.
And then the libraries disappear. And libraries are having enough trouble as it is.
I mean, I don't want to do a slippery slope argument. But again, if there's somebody annoying outside of the library every time I go, I'm going to go to a different library.
Yeah. So do we want to continue with...
Yeah, I think let's touch on this real quick. We got an email.
Oh, okay. The email is from everybody's...
Everyone's favorite... only dogmatic atheist I know, Gary from the UK.
Yeah.
Gary from Sheffield.
Here we go. Just to let you know, I'm sorry for saying you're doing a half-assed job. You are doing a 100% job, but only as atheists. Thanks for the mention on episode 12. You're welcome.
By the way, what was the word mentioned on episode 12? Was we talking about how he wanted to make atheism more like a religion, that you have to state it dogmatically, that you refuse to hear anything they say?
That happened. He mentioned that during the call I had with him, and to use his vernacular, I was gobsmacked. I'm like, you're making it sound like faith. And he's like, oh, exactly.
Exactly. That's it right on the head.
Whoa.
We're going to make it exactly like a religion.
I had a scanner's moment. My head started vibrating.
That's what's fun about Gary is he just owns it right away, and there's this level of just candid honesty.
But here we go.
Yeah.
You hit the nail on the head again when you said, I want atheism to be a dark mirror of Ray Comfort. Atheism needs to evolve and save theists from wasting their lives and destroying the lives of others. Theists seem to be obsessed about bringing on the apocalypse. I, on the other hand, want the total destruction of all religion and the people of the world to work together to make to better mankind.
This is a weird
thing.
I like
the better mankind thing.
Better mankind, but when you say, I'm calling for the total destruction.
We're in Donald Pleasant's territory.
Yeah, he's got the sort of thing he says while, you know, pushing a button and stroking a cat.
Yeah.
So it's just bizarre. The other thing with Gary is that, honestly, he makes bad arguments. No, I mean, in the weird story, he's right. Yes, religion is harmful. I do personally believe the world would be better if everyone just said, you know what? I'm not buying this stuff anymore, and let's treat this like, you know, Aesop's Fables or things like that. Treat it metaphorically, whatever, as literature. I think the world would be a better place. I think the world would be a better place without dogma, including the sort of dogma Gary uses. Gary basically says, simply because there is no... he basically says we should abandon evidence-based arguments and just stick our fingers in our ears and go, la, 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 la.
Yeah.
So...
And the thing is... You know, I agree. He's making some weird arguments I don't agree with, and I think they're soft arguments, but that doesn't mean we're angry at him. Gary, we always kind of smile a little bit when we get an email from Gary.
Yeah, you're kind of our mascot.
We're waiting for your call. We're waiting for...
Call us back.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that he's confusing the harm religion does with truth claims about it.
Yeah.
Those things are completely unrelated.
But my point is, as long as we stay above board and friendly, we can have these conversations, and if I ever find myself on that side of the world... I'd be happy to have a drink with you. I mean, or 14. I won't lie.
Oh, Gary probably has a head start on you.
I don't know. But
I hope he has a head start on you sometimes.
Yeah, if you would like to do the same, if you'd like to have a drink with us and some food, as usual, we are getting together after this episode. I believe we're getting together at the Mandarin Gate, which is 10,000 Aurora, I believe.
Just down the street from the
just
studio.
Just down the street. We'll be there at 4:30. Come on in, have some food, have a drink, and we can talk about the interview or the news and some amazing how the show was put together. It's always a great time. We've had some really interesting people come in.
Yeah.
Was Jeannie her name?
Jean, I think.
Jean. And she called in and she came to the...
That was really heartening because, I mean, she was
that
somebody...
That made the show.
That, to me, that everything we do from here on out, that makes everything worth it. She was somebody who, I believe it was after the death of her husband.
Yeah.
She hadn't left her house for a year, and she thought she was the only atheist around.
Yeah.
And she came out for the first time to hang out with us. And she was 85, and she was awesome.
And everything after that was golden.
Yeah.
It was a great time, and I was really glad to talk to her. And just to everybody else out there who might be afraid that you're alone, you're not, especially around here. That's pretty much all the time we've got. This was a very very different kind of episode.
I like to think it's a very special episode.
A very special episode.
This is where we learn to not smoke, or the Different Strokes episode with the bike shop.
Oh, yeah.
This is the episode where Nancy Reagan comes on and tells us to just say no.
Thanks for bearing with us. We'll be back next week. Our show schedule is on the website. And
come to you every Sunday.
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday,
and
3 to 4.
We did just get our renewal, and we'll be continuing. And in the same spot.
Same
bad time. Same atheism channel. And we'll see you then.